Hello and welcome to IOSH Magazine's podcast series. These podcasts will feature exclusive interviews with industry experts, behind-the-scenes discussions with members, and conversations with future leaders of the health and safety profession.
In this episode, IOSH future leaders Megan Coleman and Philip Lancashire interview the HSE's ergonomics guru, Matt Birtles, to find out what organisations should be doing to safeguard hybrid workers against MSDs.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the IOSH podcast. My name is Philip Lancashire. I'm Health, Safety and Environmental Manager at WB Power Services, chartered member of IOSH, a member of the Future Leader Steering Group, a member of the IOSH Branch Committee, and also a member of the IOSH Council. With me today is Megan Coleman.
Hello, everyone. I'm Megan Coleman. I'm a Safety, Health, Environmental and Quality Advisor at RSK Group, and a member of the IOSH Future Leaders Steering Group. And joining us today is Matt Birtles, also known as the Health and Safety Executive's Ergonomics Guru, Principal Ergonomics Consultant, to be exact.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Hi there, Megan, and hello, Philip, and to the rest of you listening. Thank you very much for having me on the podcast.
You're welcome. Thanks for joining us. So today we're going to talk about how to sort of manage musculoskeletal disorders among a hybrid workforce. So I think the first priority would be to really look at what a hybrid workforce is. So could you define that for us, Matt? What is a hybrid workforce?
Yeah, with pleasure. The definitions are changing from season to season, it would appear, in what it looks like in practice. But pre-pandemic, I suppose, we had a couple of mechanisms of working, work from the office or work from home, or some had work from anywhere, I guess. We've moved from that, and during the pandemic, of course, the request for us all to go to home to avoid spreading the virus, it means that we've been enabled by a lot more IT that's just much more portable, much more accessible via the internet to our work systems. And so hybrid is really trying to be ill-defined on purpose. So it's down to individuals to decide when they work from the office, from home or from another space, and finding that right balance between individual desires and requirements and what works for our individual colleagues and workers, and then what works for the business. And so it's somewhere in between the old model of work from home, work from the office. It's the space in between where we have a choice, sometimes working in the office when it's right for the business, sometimes working from home when it's right for ourselves, and finding that balance between the two.
Great. So can you talk to us about ergonomics and MSDs and why are they so important?
Yeah, absolutely. Ergonomics as a wider topic is really just about human-centered design. So in the workplace, and many sort of products that we use in the in our households and the vehicles we drive, they're set up to kind of be as ergonomically well designed as possible. But in the workplace, ergonomics is really starts off with understanding your workers, understanding what their capabilities are, what their limitations are, understanding what their preferences are, and what helps them, work more efficiently and be more productive, and also be happier and healthier. So, understanding the workforce and in all our glory of variation, whether we're tall or short, or old or young, or so forth. And once we understand the workers, we can then design the things that workers do to fit those workers. So the things are the tools that we use. And for many of us, we're on a computer right now. So it's the keyboard, the mouse, the screen, and the setup of furniture to make that fit your physical body. And so we can employ lots of ergonomic techniques. Anthropometry is human body size measurements. So if you're tall or if you're short, we can and should have adjustability to make that fit you as an individual. No matter how good we are at designing tools, though, if we ask people to do silly things with those tools, even if they're very, very comfortable, they'll still get hurt. And so with human-centered design, we're looking at the tools and also the task that people do. And in DSE world, in the computer world, you can have the nicest chair in the world and the best mouse and the loveliest screen, but if you're sitting there for 8, 10, 12 hours a day, every day, it's still going to be harmful. So we don't just design the nice gadgets that we and tools that we hold, but design the tasks that we do. And so it's the human center, then the tool, looking at the tools, looking at the tasks, then finally looking at the environment that we're working in to try and make sure it's conducive to health and conducive to good performance. If it's a visual job, we need to have enough light. If you're recording or listening to a podcast, we need to have a bit of quiet and those sorts of things. Get all those right and we get improved ergonomics that benefits the individual in their task performance and also their comfort and their safety and their well-being. But also just in terms of productivity, you know, we have fewer distractions, are able to sustain jobs comfortably for longer and hopefully impact positively on the bottom line. So that's ergonomics. Why MSDs? Why musculoskeletal disorders? Well, it's probably no great surprise. Anybody listening to the podcast, I'm sure anybody in the world of health and safety has come across musculoskeletal disorders at some point. And there's a fundamental reason why we're still talking about it. It's been about 80 years since the precursor to HSC started to put things out on musculoskeletal disorders. And it's a tenacious issue that's still around. Thankfully, over the last 20 years or so, we've been measuring prevalence of MSDs in the UK workforce. We are seeing a gradual but a definite reduction in prevalence rates of MSDs. We're getting better at managing musculoskeletal disorders. And that's largely because of all of you listening to the podcast. The things that you do seem to work, and hopefully in HSE, we're enabling that, and we'll maybe talk about that later on. But when you think about musculoskeletal disorder, we've all had an episode of back pain, for example. What was the principal cause? Now, when we start looking at that immediately, certainly my mind still goes to an event. I tried to lift that thing. I unloaded the car. I moved house. I did some gardening. I, you know, did an event that led to an injury. And actually, that's not a big group of MSDs. The single biggest group of musculoskeletal disorders that we see reported on in the textbooks and evidence base that I play with is actually that cumulative disorder. Nothing very bad ever happened. Lots of things happen that put the back at a mild risk of micro injuries, microscopic wear and tear. And because it wasn't really bad, it wasn't really a high risk activity with lots of heavy loads and things, we did the same again and again and again, and perhaps on a Monday and also on a Tuesday and a Thursday, Friday, and we accumulate these microscopic wear and tear. And the single biggest group of MSDs is actually nothing singular bad happening, but just the wear and tear that allows microscopic injury to accumulate faster than it's recovering. And so all of a sudden, we might be doing the same thing as we've always done, but today we happen to have the start of symptoms of musculoskeletal disorder. So they're what we're always trying to challenge, and certainly with in relation to display screen equipment and working, sitting at desks and the like, we wouldn't expect the mouse to become very heavy all of a sudden and injure you, or wouldn't expect anything singular to occur necessarily that would cause an injury. It's actually addressing that cumulative disorder. Quite innocuous, creeps up on us, and very often it's dismissed because we can't associate it with an event. But that's what we're really trying to challenge. It's about, roughly, depends on where you read, but roughly as much as 50% of all MSDs are just cumulative damage that really needs challenging, but often gets overlooked.
Okay. I think based on what you've said with regards to obviously the hybrid workforce, and I think you hit on it a little bit with the DSE side of things there, what are the main issues we're seeing since the pandemic that in this area with regards to the hybrid workforce and MSDs and ergonomics?
There are quite a few, and they're quite manifold, and they vary depending on, you know, workplaces, employers and individuals. So some of the commonalities, some of the things that we're seeing that may well be impacting well-being are more ubiquitous, you know, across our workforces. Are things like the reduction in mobility is a big deal. I don't know if anyone was around sort of 8 to 10 years ago where sedentary work was a big focus and trying to break sedentary patterns of work. So getting us out of our office seats back then and getting us moving around more face-to-face communication, more, I don't know, standing meetings and things like that. Well, being at home, what happened during the lockdowns was almost overnight. We saw this across every country, pretty much in the UK. Those smartwatches and Fitbits and Garmin kind of products that we're using that measure our steps, that data was used to just measure what happens when we go into a lockdown. And our steps universally dropped by about 4,000 a day. I don't know if anyone still aims for 10,000 steps a day, which is a nice aim to have. Go for as many as you can, to be honest with you, it's probably better for your health. But they dropped immediately. And when we're doing, we are working in a hybrid way, those days that we have where we're at home, there's a chance that our steps are really reduced by, we know from that data, about 4,000 a day. So that increase in sedentary is quite a big impact. Obviously, for the musculoskeletal well-being, but also cardiovascular and all the other things that, that walking gives to us. There's quite a bit of research published earlier this year that really highlights the fundamentals of how important it is that we're mobile when we're just more active at work and in our leisure time. So that's a universal, a common issue that I think we're seeing across the board. The common challenges we're hearing about from the different kind of employers and workers are things like where the line is, where do we need to hit with our sort of DSC or dispersion equipment risk management, and what does good practice look like? And it's a challenge, and it's going to be a challenge. I'm not going to fix that for you in this podcast, unfortunately. Although I don't want to put you off, do stay around. It's worthwhile listening, I'm sure, to the end. But there isn't an answer. There isn't the bottom line that says everybody should have a list of furniture, a list of devices. It's really about finding, through engagement with individuals, finding what they need to accommodate their work practices. Some of us may need a really nice office chair. Some of us may need a really nice office desk in our home, but some of us don't have a home that's big enough for an office chair and office desk. And chucking that into a kitchen area is going to make a big difference to the footprint of the home. And so there isn't a one size fits all solution. And so that's been a common question we've been asked throughout the pandemic, and certainly since the HSE policy lines were changed at the late last year, earlier this year. And if you look on our website, you can see those policy lines. But effectively what they say and what they advocate for is to go and do an assessment, provide an assessment for people working at home, but don't do so in the classical sense of a DSC assessor with a clipboard and maybe a tape measure knocking on everyone's door. Instead, do it by embracing the world of self-assessment. Many of us do that with online systems anyway. But to be a self-assessor, to have each of the workers provide management with their own assessment of their own workstation at home, it means that those workers do need to be trained up, do need to be given the understanding of the key risk factors and what they're looking for with their assessments, and then empowered with the knowledge of how they can make changes happen. You know, those shopping lists of items they want, what's available, what could they expect from the work, from the employer, what isn't available, what's more challenging. It's up to that assessment then to provide that. And so it's not an easy answer. It's a very common question, though. I do appreciate that it's a common challenge, especially where you've got variations in desires. Even I'd like a chair. Does that mean I should have one? Or you're telling me I have to have a chair, but I don't have time, space to fit it. What's the right answer? It's got to accommodate all those things. And so, and I'm jumping maybe ahead of this, but the desired outcome is to understand the risk, and that means doing an assessment. That should be a self-assessment. On our website, there's a DSC, we call it CK1. There's a DSC checklist. That's a really good way of sending that out to people and having them run through it themselves. But to do so, they need to understand what good looks like and what does good posture look like. And again, on our HC website, there's images of good posture and there's guidance on how to achieve decent posture whilst sitting in front of your computer. But there's lots of other guidance out there as well, not just ours, which is quite simplistic on purpose. if you wanted to go deeper into this, the Chartered Institute for Ergonomics and Human Factors have got a few pages of guidance on this that's freely available. YouTube's full of really great advice as well, how to set up a workstation at home. But it's about getting that understanding of what a good posture, while you're working at your computer, what a good posture looks like, how do you achieve it? And it's all those simple things. I'm sure you've all seen a sideways image of a person at a computer with the screen at arm's length away and the keyboard just below seated elbow height and so forth. At home, you may not have the same way with all that you've got in the office. So instead of actually being prescriptive, the way forward is to understand what good posture looks like and then find alternative means of achieving that. So, you know, if you haven't got an adjustable chair, you're actually sitting still on a dining table and a dining chair, that can be made okay just by introducing cushions and using cushions to elevate your body position so that you've got a decent posture with your feet on the ground and, you know, good support. So it's about being a bit more pragmatic and finding solutions that will work in the, often for many of us, the environments that we've got are quite limiting. Is that enough for that? I'm happy to drone on for a long time about that particular one, but I don't want to turn people off.
No, that's fine. I think we'll come back to more of that later.
So you've obviously discussed about how it has the impact to have an impact on a lot of people now. They've adopted a hybrid model of working. So as health and safety advisors, professionals and managers, are there any clever ideas you've come across that our listeners can implement into their businesses?
Yes. The cleverest thing we can do, I guess it's twofold. And one is engage with individuals. We often are setting up systems that are designed to improve the working lives of the masses. If a system will, a policy followed by procedures or other policies will be good enough for everybody. Within those policies, though, there's got to be a lot more about individual engagement. And so setting up those policies so that you somehow, and please don't do it all. If you're a large organization, don't try and do this all yourself. It's probably one or two or three of you in that sort of health and safety realm that'll be writing the policies. Don't necessarily put it on yourselves to have every conversation with every member of the workforce and resolve their issues. But instead set up, the support network, so that their line managers, whomever they may be, they can have those conversations. Those conversations are the smartest thing you can do. The problem is every conversation with every individual will be different, and so not one solution fits all. It's not necessarily a simplification. Working at home in hybrid isn't necessarily make our lives simpler as safety managers and practitioners, but this is certainly the way to go about it. Don't try and do all the toolbox talk, training and things like yourself. Anybody who's listening to this has probably already got enough knowledge on Zoom, MS Teams and things like that. By all means, take a video if you're doing it the first time and send those sorts of videos out. Don't try and personally engage with people, but do get the messages both to the line managers, what are their clearly defined responsibilities and requirements for them, and then also to the individual workers. What we're trying to achieve with our hybrid home working, what are the benefits and what are the pitfalls, and also support the management line managers by saying, where is it? We often are seeing the idea that come to work when it's a business advantage, come to work when it's good for the business, stay at home when it's also good for the business, but good for you. What makes it good for the business? When are the times whereby it would be good to have people in? Let's deal with those as a policy as well, so that it's not a constant question that we're constantly having to address. We are in a phase now where we're setting up the new norms, and that means a lot of requirement for a lot of clear communication, clear understanding, and where those redrawing, where those lines are. Please don't try and do that. Any of us do that individually for everybody, but instead let's get the lines out there. In terms of setup itself, it's also, yes, people do often think, especially when it's got an HSE logo on, that we're very prescriptive. Please don't think that. We're about achieving good. We're not about achieving perfect. You'll notice that we often talk about good practice, never best practice, because we can always be better. And we're not asking you with your assessments and with your policies, just with what we do to for people when they're working at home. It's not like filling in a passport application where everything must be perfect. We've really got to embrace fit for purpose here. And where that does mean using a cushion under your bum or in your back to get a bit of support, then do that. And it's fine to do that. Of course, it's not the best. The best is a rather nice, rather expensive, highly adjustable chair. But that's not going to work. And so embrace the fact that many times that's not going to work. And aim for, and don't kind of ignore the issue, aim for fit for purpose, aim for good enough. And so the usual things apply. Sitting all day is ever so bad for you, no matter how comfortable your chair is. Sitting all day is ever so bad for you. So let's change posture. Let's get people standing. Maybe more so in the offices. And I don't know, I wish I bought chairs 10 years ago, but we're seeing a lot more height adjustable workstations and things like that. Well, they are, of course, best practice. They're great for standing working. But could you not use something else, an upside-down box on the table? I know in the CAHF guidance, they talk about perhaps using a dining board to stand up for a while. Now, none of these things are perfect, and we can buy quite cheap. I bought one for my wife, actually, a laptop stand that sits on a desk that means that you can stand up for a bit. They're not the best, they're not perfect, but they are really good enough. And it's about going back to the basic principles of what we're trying to achieve. And that's, we know sitting all day is bad for you, so stand up for a bit and change posture. And also, I guess, just alluding back to the first fact of more sedentary work, break that. One of the advices we need to give, that those sideways on pictures of DSE workstation setup, they don't necessarily get across, is we need to encourage people working at home just to take more motion breaks, to take more rest breaks from sedentary by being a bit more active. And that means open-mindedness as well. If that means going for instead of having a half an hour lunch, having an hour lunch and taking a dog for a walk halfway through the day, then let's accommodate that. If that means more, I have a particular colleague in there, just today was her kit meeting, and we've purposely set this up through the pandemic. We get on the mobile phones, we get off MS Teams, we get on the mobile phones and we both go for a walk around our local neighbourhood. Get a couple of thousand steps in while we're having a catch up, and embrace more of that. It engages people with the idea of it so that it gets the message across, but also has benefits to the well-being of colleagues just by doing more of what's good for them. So yeah, I mean, tips from the top, don't be too concerned about perfection. And certainly our website and the lines in there are really about good practice and setting lines, not perfect practice or best practice. And do be open-minded where there's engagement piece with individual workers does suggest more alternatives to just the alternative of being either in the office or not. Then embrace them, try and make them work. And if you've found something like that, keep a monitor. If it works for one person, it may work for many. So do get that message out there. We've found a good practice here. Let's make a quick case study of it. Send it round in our next, you know, company-wide communication or something.
Brilliant. I think sometimes, from my perspective, some businesses do struggle with that perfect aspect, in a sense that, you know, they see that DSE image of that sideways look and sort of get a feeling that if they can't achieve that in somebody's home, then their alternative is, well, they must come back to work. And that's where I think sometimes some people struggle, because they can't find that good part rather than the perfect part, and really think, well, I can't achieve that at home, so you'll need to come back to work. And then I think that's where the hybrid workforce doesn't really seem to gel as well.
Yeah, I think you're right. Then the discussion goes along the lines of, do I need a rather expensive to deliver chair or not? And if you can't have one, come to the office. There are alternatives out there. If you can, for some people who've got chronic, you know, musculoskeletal disorders and they need that additional support, it perhaps won't work in the interim. But and so for some people, sure, it would be right for them to be in the office a lot more. But again, keep that under review once they've recovered. If they see that hybrid working or working from home occasionally is a benefit, they may be able to give that back once they're better. On occasion, that happens, yeah. But for most of us, most of the time, we can accommodate good enough. We can accommodate fit for purpose. It may be that our home setup isn't quite as good, and so we have to take a few more breaks. If we have to take a few more breaks just to reset the body and let it recover from a slightly compromised posture, then we just work an extra half an hour at the end of the day to accommodate that time. Or it's about having that kind of flexibility in our approaches. We'll not be, as in the inspectorate, will not be knocking on doors of people's home offices and saying, can we please check? It's not going to happen, I'm certain of it. And I don't think the expectation is on safety managers to go and check that as well. But that's not to say we don't acknowledge it. We just accommodate it through, you know, we often call them softer measures, but making sure that, you know, where we are compromised the posture a little bit, we spend a bit less time in that posture by being a bit more active. And look, as one of the people who helped draw that picture, that wasn't without controversy either. We don't want to be, that picture's meant to just have sideways perfect posture from a DSC. It's purely meant to be an example of what good looks like. Absolutely acknowledge that as soon as any of us with a high-vis jacket and a DSC badge somewhere, the second we turn away, whether in the office or at home, nobody sits like that for very long. But why we're setting up workstations like that is that when we do start to slump in our chair and just start to sort of relax a little bit into that seated posture after 40 minutes or so, we're not too far away from what's half decent. So yeah, it's please don't assume that that's the be all and all. There are some lines we'd like to draw. I think, you know, we know that there's a really good report from the Royal Society for the Protection of Health, and the report called Disparity Works at Home that was done in the pandemic. And from that, we learned where people were during the lockdowns, where people were working. And there were a few people, you know, I think it was around about 4% of the people were working on a sofa, 7% people working in their bedroom, but not on the desk. So maybe we definitely want to draw a line under those and say, let's not do that. We know that can't be healthy for us in the long term. But beyond that, you know, we can make, if needs be, we can make the dining table work. We can make these things fit for purpose. They don't have to be perfect if people can't get their very nice sit-down workstations and adjustable chairs in their homes.
Okay, perfect. One probably final bit to maybe look into, and I think from my experience, I think they all work together, sort of ergonomics, MSDs, and just to maybe pick on the sort of mental health side of obviously the hybrid workforce and how can we as sort of health and safety professionals support people on that side of things? You know, these people who are maybe working from home full time, you know, they're not coming into the office, they're maybe not seeing their colleagues physically for a long time. How do we help them as best as possible?
Yeah, thanks. And look, first thing to mention, as an ergonomist, I'm privileged to work alongside a more than a handful of psychologists who give you a far more eloquent and evidence-based answer here. So I'll have a go, but the first thing I'll caveat this by saying it's not necessarily my field of expertise. And on the HC website, there are a few documents that will give you a lot more of a rounder view and also signpost you to really good guidance on managing mental health. I think it seems to be one of the things we've got is some evidence, and it's not ubiquitous across all sectors, but there's some evidence that while we're working at home, we are more productive. And that's totally understandable and it shouldn't be a surprise. But where does that increased productivity come from? Well, amongst other things, a reduced sort of number of things to knock you off track, socialization and things that may just you know, take you out to your principal task and change your mindset. Someone walking up to a desk and saying hello and so forth. One of the areas we're more productive is we actually tend to work a few longer hours each week when we're at home. I do that myself. I've got about a 40-minute commute to work. when I'm working at home, yeah, work can have that back a bit, and I'll work an extra half hour at the end of each day, for example. Now, that additional workload may take its toll, reduce time to recover from work and reduce time to have those home social events and home socialization. Do watch the workload and make sure that you're not overworking. But at the same time, when we're in the office, things like keeping an eye on progress, on work progress, is almost a daily basis. If you've got a line manager who sits close to you on some open plan desk, I know some of the time that can be a mixed blessing, but any progress that's going on, that's almost checked in a social sense. Losing those checks, losing those measures, can mean that somebody can go really far off progress and we not notice. And that could be because of a mental health issue, could be because of just a physical health issue. Above all, in the interim of this, had something happen in our house, or Amazon packages have been delivered or so forth, that can be a disturbance from work. But when it's a wider sort of sense of going off the principal task, it may be something that's missed more so with people working at home than in the office. Those sorts of cues you might pick up on in the office a bit more so. So it's about making sure that you've got mechanisms to keep an eye on people's health and well-being at home, on progress in the jobs while they're at home. And of course, we've got not just the stress management standards, but hopefully you're all aware of the Talking Toolkit, which kind of takes the six stress management standards that we know of, the things like pressure and relationships and change and so forth. It changes the kind of language of them, and so it gives you a structured conversation to have with an individual, just to check in, just to make sure that they're okay, make sure they're not suffering from adverse pressure leading to stress. Those sorts of checks, we are losing them from being in the office. So where people are working hybrid and more time at home, how are you going to reintroduce those? And most of us are doing quite frequent line manager check-ins, which hopefully is nothing more than once a week. Good morning. How are you? How's this issue with your cat and your kids and your, oh, by the way, is this project or work or going to plan? Hopefully it's quite quick and easy, but just maintaining those. We are at the ebbs and tides of our own home activity, and work, amongst other things, gives us a really good sort of high tide, high water mark. We have to be a certain level of performance to get to work. We have to engage with and pretend we even like our colleagues in our open plan workstations and on our office pods and things. That does set a standard that we are losing, especially if people working at home without socialization in the house or without a family to live with. We also know that from the report disparity begins at home, made during the pandemic, working at home affects people who are living are living together in a domicile in a home that aren't married, and so basically those members of society who are I'm perhaps youthful, or you've got a house share, or you're living with somebody, I think it impacts on those individuals a bit more, predominantly because it's not socially acceptable to have an argument to say to somebody who you're living with that's not your husband or your wife or your partner. To say, you can say, look, everyone get off the internet. I've got an important Zoom call. Everyone, shut your face. I'm doing a podcast recording. I can say that to my wife and kids. They'll get me back for it later, but it's kind of socially acceptable. Where you're sharing a house with somebody who you're not in that sort of partnership with, we know that it's had a greater toll on those individuals. And so just acknowledging those sorts of things, making sure that we're never going to, replace socialization. By being line management and by being safety managers. So, but just accommodating them by saying, let's have more frequent catch-ups, more frequent keep-in-touch meetings, maybe without an agenda, just to check in so that we can start discussing these things that are inevitably, in fact, affecting us, because we've lost a lot of the icons there of normally being sitting next to each other in the office space.
That's great. Thanks, Matt. Thanks for joining us today. It's been really interesting to talk to you.
Thank you for having me. Hopefully that's useful. Inevitably, I'm here for a pitch as well. So spoil your own weekends by jumping on the HC website. An awful lot of information's on there. Please don't jump on the HC website at the detriment of taking a walk or doing some exercise. It's very good for you. But please, if anything here chimes, go and have a look on our website, and hopefully there'll be more information there for you. But thanks very much indeed, guys, for having me. Really appreciate it.
Brilliant. Cheers, Matthew. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed the episode. See you next month for another conversation on all things health and safety.